The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For being part of this YouTube community and practicing and meditating and sharing with, and listening and being part of these teachings, I could never have imagined, for 4 or 5 months ago that we would have, that this would have been so meaningful to so many people, and also meaningful for myself, that that we could have this regular ongoing contact, and I could have regular ongoing contact with these Dharma themes and kind of work them and carry them with me through the day and get up in the morning and have the opportunity to start the day this. Okay, so it's been wonderful for me to have been doing this. So I feel very happy and grateful and happy that you're here. And also it's been quite touching for me to know, I didn't know this. I don't know how many YouTube videos I ever saw in my life before this, but I can tell you confidently that it's many, many times, I've now broadcast myself on YouTube many, many, many more times than I ever looked at a YouTube video. That this YouTube world has not been my world or one that I'm familiar with. And one thing that really surprised me when we started was the chats. I had no idea that the chats would be a vehicle of feeling connected and feeling the warmth, feeling the involvement of people. And we've created a kind of community here for this time. So one of the things I was hoping we would do here is have a breakout groups where you could meet with other people in this Zoom community. And so the idea is to have breakout groups of be random groups of about 5 people. And you have about 12 minutes to introduce yourselves and you could just share where you're from or how it's been for you to be part of this YouTube phenomena. Or maybe more specifically about, what wisdom do you have about how to be with things when they don't work the way they're supposed to? When, not things are happening not as planned as it happened for us today. So have about 12 minutes or so. I think you'll get a little warning, a 1 minute warning, and then we'll come back and I could also try to answer some questions, or maybe if some of you have something you want to say that in this context, and we can continue after the breakout groups. So if the host can please do that, that would be wonderful. It's a little bit like Star Trek, that we're going to be beamed up, and we're just waiting for the beaming. Maybe this is a little bit how Spock feels when he stands in the beaming up place, waiting for it to happen. Do you have anything that you want to ask me or anything that you want to say? And the way we'll do this is, if you click on the participants list at the bottom, I think that that's where you'll find you can raise your hand. I believe that's right. And
so Gil, I'll interrupt you and say that's how you do it if you're on a computer. If you're on a phone or a tablet, you can click the 3 dots. So that's the different ways to get in to see the participant list. And then, and then you can raise your hand.
And now we have 5 people who raised their hands. So So, Carolyn. So I think the host has to unmute them. So Carolyn.
Yeah, you know,
There she's unmuted. There, okay. I think what might be that what happens is the host offers you a chance to unmute yourself, and then you have to do it again yourself. I think that's how I had to do it before. So Carolyn, please.
Okay. Thank you for this. You know, I came in on it late, and so I wasn't in on everything that was going on, but I was so happy to see this. And one of the biggest questions I think that we had in our group of four was, do you think that this Zoom will continue? Will you be able to connect with us even after you don't have to online? Is this something that will be part of, of connecting to all of us in a much wider framework?
Well, thank you. I haven't given serious thought about it, that your question, the way you worded it, but certainly I like the idea, and I think I'd love the idea. I love the idea of continuing. One of the surprises is how much all the variety of online offerings are so powerful for people, so useful. We've had online retreats that people are delighted. I mean, it opens up new vistas of practice for people who they practice from home rather than at a retreat center, and they understand more about practicing in daily life than they ever have before. And I'm impressed by how meaningful this is, how important this is, these morning sits. And Diana and Nikki, who do the happy hour, and it's been very, very important offering as well, in the weekday days and in the afternoon. So we'll definitely continue in some way. And I think it's in my heart to continue with this Zoom in the morning. But whether it's how practical it is, how well it'll work, once we get back into the regular schedule, I'll go off and do residential retreats again. Can I integrate this into doing retreats as well? Maybe I'll do a good number of them, and maybe I'll have guest teachers come when I can do it. And maybe that's one way of sustaining it, just thinking out loud, is maybe we will continue forever. But, if I'm not the one who's always teaching it, then we can, we have a great group of competent teachers. And I think in 2 weeks, I'm probably not going to be able to do it in a couple of weeks. And Diana Clark, who's a wonderful teacher here, will continue it for the week that I'm gone. So maybe we can do more of that. So that was a long answer to something between yes and probably.
I think one of the problems we talked about was having enough background staff to make it work.
Yeah. So. Well, what we're trying to make our specialty at IMC and also our retreat center is to try to make things as simple as possible. And it was a wonderful coincidence that the volunteer who does most of the hardware kind of tech support for us happened to be here, because there was other work going to happen here today. So I just went down when you were doing your breakout group. I went and talked to him, and he discovered what the problem was with the sound for you. You weren't there, I guess, but for YouTube. And so we have an operating system called OBS that connects our camera to YouTube, and when somehow that malfunctioned, and when he turned it off and turned on again, then it works. So come Monday, it should be working again.
Great.
Thank you. And I also add something, and I think some of you feel this very strongly. There's all kinds of people who don't have access to a community, don't have access to this kind of ongoing contact. And some people need to stay home for whatever reason. They have kids, they can't get out for some reason. And so this really lets people be connected in a very important way. And it seems very important to continue offering this support. So I'm very aware of these things, and this goes into our decision to continue. We'll definitely continue. It's so, we realize it's so important that we actually got ourselves a new URL to be prepared that's called Insight Meditation Online. And I don't think we've started to use it yet, but we think that we were thinking that IMC was ready for a second retreat center. We have this retreat center called Insight Retreat Center, and it's full and long waiting lists to get in. And it's been kind of a little bit of a troublesome thing for me, or painful thing for me, that so many people who want to come and do these residential retreats can't get in because of the long waiting list. And we could probably offer 6 times more retreats than we do because of the waiting list. And so we were talking about, started to have conversations about what would it take to get a second retreat center. And then along came shelter in place. And now we said, wait a minute, our next retreat center will be the online retreat center. And we got the URL, Insight Meditation Online, and so the definitely the plan is to continue with a robust offering online, and so that'll continue, but just that, you know, what anyway. So that's enough for this. Thank you. So then, Kathy.
Okay. Good morning, Gil. It's 5:18, and that's why it's so dark here.
Uh-huh.
This last week, and I was sharing this with the group, you were talking about joy, and I was having sorrow arising, and I felt when I tried to look for joy that all I felt was dissonance inside. So I eventually just gave up and just was with what was arising. And I didn't know if you had any other wisdom or guidance on.
Yes. This is, you know, I should probably make this kind of teaching all the time, that whenever Dharma, almost always when Dharma teachers teach, it's always a piece of the bigger puzzle. And so things like certain states like joy certainly are not going to be accessible and available all the time to every, you know, for anybody. And so to emphasize that, so people don't feel like they're somehow left out or wrong or something, definitely there are times when I'm not going to feel joy because what's happening in my life is very different. But there is something about turning towards whatever is difficult and holding it in attention and awareness that is satisfying or has a rightness, feeling of rightness to it. That, so it's not so much joy, but there is a feeling of, yes, this is what needs my attention. That, yes, this is where I'm going to be. And for me personally, that approximates or substitutes for what I think of as joy in the Dharma, is this feeling as now I'm connected to what's true. It's painful, it's difficult, but this is really true, and that's where I want to be.
The other day you mentioned the word relief in one of your talks, and yeah, that resonates.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we can tell it's morning there from the rooster.
Yep, they're just waking up.
Great. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
And then Catherine.
Hi. Hi, Gil.
Hi.
It's wonderful to be here. I actually have two questions. It seemed like what we were doing this week was a kind of jhana practice of the deep concentration practice, which I sort of see as a counterpoint to this four foundations of mindfulness practice. In the Satipatthana Sutta. Commentary on that is it, would you call this a jhana practice? And also during second question, during several of our sessions this week, I experienced a sort of tension between, you know, we're going into tranquility and happiness and joy, and there was stuff coming up that, you know, grief, you know, for a loved one who died, and, you know, various other things coming up. So there was a sort of tension between it. And I didn't know which way to go. Like, maybe I should do, you know, insight practice with what is arising rather than, you know, trying to find the happy place.
Yes.
So
let me start with the second one, that kind of a little bit like what I said before, that always, I think I think it's wise to, you know, for the most part, to really be with what's happening. So if something like the joy or tranquility that a teacher is pointing towards is accessible as an exercise, it can be useful and supportive. And but there are times definitely it's not going to happen. And so then the practitioner has to decide, do I try to continue with what the teacher is saying when it doesn't work for me? Or this is not the time for me, and maybe I'll listen to the recording later when it does work. And for now, I think I have to turn my mindfulness to my grief or whatever is going on. And that's what needs my attention. And that's completely appropriate. So every practitioner has to kind of find for themselves where it's what's appropriate for them. Very aware that, you know, these poor teachers, they can't know what's suited for everyone, especially when there's so many people in the room. And so I apologize for not, you know, making more caveats or explaining this more actively. And in terms of the first question, there is a long history in Theravada Buddhism of separating apart concentration practice and insight practice as if they're very two radically different things. And I prefer to see them as being closely integrated, so that the word samadhi is not limited to concentration practice. In fact, in the Buddha's teachings, he sometimes talks about the four foundations of mindfulness as a samadhi. And sometimes he explicitly associates the four foundations of mindfulness with the first jhana. And so these five qualities of the Dharma samadhi that, I think they're really wonderful because they come into play at different levels of concentration or different levels of meditation. And I think sometimes they're in the suttas, they're very clearly associated with the jhanas. And that's what's really being talked about. But they can also arise in well before the concentration is that strong. They can arise in mild ways. And that in as they arise much more mildly, they're still very meaningful. And they can still follow that flow of gladness to joy to tranquility to happiness and to some kind of concentration. So whether you switched from, you know, so I for people who do straight mindfulness practice, sooner or later, these Dharma Samadhi qualities will arise on their own. In some form or other, and you'll recognize, oh, I'm in the flow now, I'm on the slide. Oh, this is not beginning to happen to me. And it doesn't have to be, you know, switched to do concentration in order to have these experiences.
Thank you, that really makes sense.
Great, thank you. And then, so then we have Karen B.
Okay, now, I could not unmute myself, sorry about that. And the last name's Blocklinger, it's just too long to put into the box. Mm-hmm. But thanks for everything, Gil, and thank you for continuing. For myself, what I was sharing in our little group is that I find that the teachings penetrate so much more deeply if I have it in addition to the auditory channel, which I had before on listening to your podcasts, mm-hmm. to the visual channel as well, where your presence is so beautiful and inspiring. It's a teaching in itself. So thank you again.
Yes.
And you mentioned a little bit before about using our own words to describe these qualities of the Dhamma Samadhi. And I find that I have a very hard time identifying specific emotions or differences between pleasure and joy and happiness. It's just like, oh, good, oh, lovely, don't cling, oh, lovely, don't cling, kind of thing. But how important is it for me to be a little bit more precise in identifying exactly what is present at the moment? Is it something, whatever I call it, but to notice distinct categories? Is that important?
I muted myself. There's some banging going on nearby here. So what's important is to be with what is. And so when sometimes we don't have, it's not that we don't have the option of being present for things in some exact, clear, definitive way. And so sometimes what's to be present for what really is to be present to chaos, or to be present to things are vague. Or you know, or present, like, and instead of noticing difference between pleasure and joy, is just being pleasure, being present for this feels good. You know, so what's available to us, rather than needing to probe or dig and find the, but ideally, as practice deepens, there are times when we have the capacity to feel much more specificity around it. But we don't want to be ahead of ourselves before we're ready for that. Now, if it's a regular thing for a person, the person, like, there are people who have very hard time connecting to emotions, or there's a parts of their life they've never really looked at, and so it's all a big, vague blur. Then sometimes outside of meditation, it might be useful to do some exercises or do some investigation to explore that. So, for example, this is not you, but for example, some people, it's useful to go get a dictionary or a thesaurus and find all the synonyms for anger. And then and then start kind of spending a few weeks seeing if they can see the difference between annoyance and irritation and anger and rage and wrath or whatever, you know, all the whole gamut, and start seeing the subtle differences between them that they never thought about before. Or I've given people the exercise of getting a list of, like, you know, a long list of all the emotions, and then make them an exercise. So if a person doesn't have much contact or experience with emotions. But generally in meditation, we don't do that complicated kind of work. Does that make sense? Great. Very nice. Thank you. So then we have Tom.
Hello. I guess I'm a first time caller, long time listener, and I have a question that might be unusual, and it's related to my practice over the past number of years, which has certainly taken off since you started these morning sittings in a very important way, and that's that I find that I've been, and I don't know how common this is. It might be a very common experience, but I don't find it spoken about. I find that I can quite easily, and I'm getting actually more and more attuned to it, feel all the energy all over my body. It's sort of like an electricity. It probably is some sort of electrical field. And I can, and it's not hard for me to actually, and I don't know who the I is that is doing it, but to actually move it around. I can quite easily move it around in my body. It's not a fantastical thing. I can feel the physical sensations as I push it all around. And I used to think that, this is something I should be doing to explore myself or what have you. Then it started, then I'd heard something a number of years ago from S.N. Goenka that it's really much better to leave everything as it is and just look at it and sort of inspect it and let it be, but not be pushing it around. He didn't use those terms because he wasn't quite talking about it in the same way. So I'm interpreting it like that. And I'm wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
And when this electrical field begins to flow in your body, is it, are you feeling pretty settled, calm, concentrated at that time? Is it kind of a relatively pleasant or comfortable time in meditation? I see you got muted again. Let's see if we can
I wanted to be polite, so I muted myself again. It can be. It depends on what it can be, because it can be sort of exciting to be able to sort of move energy around. But I just thought, I better stop doing that and start focusing more on not what am I doing to myself, but learning more about what is my body and the rest of it. What is it telling me? What can I learn from it?
Great. Okay. Thank you. So generally, I think a good answer is for this kind of practice is all of the above, whatever is helpful. Now, if what is helpful is you feel like there's too much self involved and too much agency, I'm in charge, I'm doing this, that's something we want to become to get free of and find a whole different way that's not so self-centered to do the practice, not with this self-agency, me, myself, and mine at the center. So if that's what's helpful, then you want to stop doing your moving energy around and just be with things much simpler. If someone feels very ungrounded, or they feel somehow their emotions are blocked up or something, sometimes it can be very helpful to take the energy, if you have access to what you're talking about, and just send it down to your feet, send it out through your feet. If you have trouble sleeping and there's all this energy, to send it out your feet, to just let it kind of, so that sometimes lets it kind of discharge and relax and helps a person go to sleep. So there's different ways of working with it depending on what's needed. The Buddha talked about that's why I was asking about concentration. When these kinds of sensations you're describing here occur because of we're getting concentrated, then the Buddha actually instructs people to not send them in any particular direction, but let them expand to include the whole body. And by expanding to include the whole body, that can support the idea that, I'm not in charge exactly, or it's not all about me, myself, and mine. It's almost like a relaxing to be expansive. And that can be very healing to have the energy go through the whole body. But sometimes the energy is there not because of concentration, but because of something going on emotionally. And to play around with the energy is just counterproductive and might actually make the emotional whole thing more complicated than it needs to be. So you have to have some wisdom about how you use it. So hopefully what I've said today gives you enough kind of options that you can explore a little bit for yourself. And this is a kind of, if this continues to be an interesting issue for you, a compelling issue, then talking to a teacher about it is a good thing.
Thank you so much.
Great, thank you. So then, Roman.
Oh.
Yes. I hope you got muted again. Yeah, you're still muted.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. The teachings this week were just great. And when you asked us to feel, happiness in our body or whatever emotion we placed on that, I thought back to probably an experience that I had we use the term flow, as a runner where, and this was a long time ago, about 15 years, I was in a marathon and I went about an hour and all of a sudden I realized I was an hour farther down the race. It was just endorphins. It was that pleasant, feeling. And when you described what we were working towards this week, I was wondering if just sitting, and I know patience is needed in the practice, but just by sitting and using mindfulness, are those the same types of feelings that will come about at some point?
Yes, they can, absolutely. And for some of the same reasons of being really absorbed and engaged and fully present for what's and intimate with what's going on. And they can happen that way. And it's kind of wonderful to have these kinds of flow, these kinds of strong kind of flow feelings happen for no good reason. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to go running or it's just like you're just there for your experience in a very full way. You're like really settled in here and present. So it's just a, you know, it's a wonderful lesson on how little we need or how we can experience some of the deepest joys of life without having won the lottery or, you know, have the date with the most wonderful person. You know, just, wow, it's just, it's even better to sit here and have this flow within. But, you know, it's very important with mindfulness practice that we don't set ourselves up to expect this all the time. And it's more like it's a gift when it happens. And part of the reason to teach it this week a little bit is so that we can recognize the gift that when it's there, but not be impatient because it's not there, or not try to engineer it to make it be there. The deeper forms of this flow happen a lot from this deep acceptance and opening and allowing with a lot of patience and a lot of permission for our life to be as it is, rather than trying to engineer something to happen. So does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Great. So I don't know if I have time to finish all of them. There's four more. If you think you can ask a question quickly, I can try to do all four because I have to leave at 8:45 today for my next event. So we can start with Demi and see how far we get.
Hi, good morning. Well, one of my questions was, you know, with in regards to the jhana, and you've already sort of answered that, but I was interested in the way you said to use concentration as like a way of empowerment to have a choice. Uh-huh. And I know that your teaching was a little cut off today because of, you know, technology. Could you just speak just quickly about that a little more, clearer?
When the concentration, this unification is strong, any kind of feeling of I'm inadequate or feelings of fear or resistance or fragmentation within has settled down for temporarily during this time. And it has a certain feeling of power and energy and presence to it. And there's also, it can be a lot of clarity. And so to come out of a meditation in a concentrated state with a clarity and the calm, it does give people a certain kind of power, a certain kind of engagement and clarity in what they do. And it can be, that could be applied to just washing the dishes that you left in the sink before you meditated, you know, just really be there. It can be done in, hopefully very appropriately and ethically. It can be done in social situations and done for social justice, or it could be done for work to really kind of apply ourselves to work and just, you know, there's a kind of energy of application that's there. And, yeah, so there can be a certain kind of power. And in general sense, you know, this Buddhist practice does lead, and it's lead to, and it's important to understand this, to a really a resolving, a dissolving of selfishness. It's really important to understand this. At the same time, it doesn't make us weak people. It actually makes us strong people. There's a personal power that comes from no longer being selfish. And hopefully then because of that, that inner power that we have and strength is not going to be used for selfish reasons. It's going to be used for, in some sense, like selfless reasons, you know, for to benefit others and all that. But we don't want to think that this letting go of selfishness or letting go of self that they talk about a lot in Buddhism is supposed to leave us kind of, you know, couch potato, you know, you know, like we don't count and we just kind of better if you're just invisible. It's no, I mean, you're hopefully your presence is strong. Make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much, Gil.
Great. So maybe we can take one more. So Chris in San Francisco.
Hey, Gil. thanks so much for what you've been doing for this past 3 months. You've flipped so much for me in my cave of snow here during this. It's just been really exciting. Just two things really quickly. The energy state, I've been doing a lot of Qigong to get energy moving. It's been very, very helpful. Maybe yes. That can help that student. Also, this book, Permission to Feel, written by psychologists at Yale. He's got a whole set of emotions to work with and feeling states. It's quite good.
That's a perfect little saying for mindfulness practice. In mindfulness practice, you have permission to feel. Absolutely.
My question to you is, this week, I was like, oh, okay. You know, joy, empathy. I mean, joy, these feeling states, these jhana states that seem to occur, seem to happen now without even trying to practice. They start to arise. I can feel it. And it's just happening itself, and it's nice to hold on to that sort of Rick Hansen, hold on to that feeling state, right? I'm wondering if you have any idea of, I'm trying to mark things now with images or talismans or amulets or mandalas, like to really think, wow, how can I reach this right now because I need it and I'm not able to do it thought-wise or physically, and I just need to bond with that picture or image because that image or feeling will pull those feelings forward. This is sort of Tibetan in many ways, but do you know what my question is here? Marking something like this, this feeling state, with an actual talisman or an image or...
Yeah. I appreciate this so much, what you're asking. But I don't use those kinds of language, those kinds of words. So I'll try to respond appropriately. And that is that... In those times in practice, and they'll come and go for everyone, so you have to be prepared for that, that concentration and jhana practice is open for us, and channels are open, the channels have been oiled. Sometimes it's like you could almost not get concentrated. Just the slightest little thing that you do will open the doors into the jhana practice. And
okay.
It's more like you don't need to do much. It's almost like it's hard not to when it's really strong. Mostly associate that with retreats, but it can happen outside of retreats. But also sometimes when it's not, because it's relatively accessible, having something like a ritual or some words that you use, or maybe
sure.
an image or something, something that kind of reminds you, evokes that, is enough to open the door or put you on top of the slide and you go on to it. And so I think that's a very wise thing to do. It's a very useful thing to do, provided you're not greedy,
mm-hmm.
provided that you don't have a lot of self invested in it.
Sure.
And provided that you're always ready to practice what is.
Sure.
If that doesn't happen. And that you want to be free of concentration states too. Free, not so much you don't have them, but you don't need them in some deep, sense of place of well-being.
I hear what you're saying. Sometimes I need just a little bit of medicine, and I'm thinking of medicine like I'm standing in the line and I'm starting to get a little anxious or whatever, and I need to pull that image through, and I'll work with that. Thanks so much for your offering.
I love that sometimes when you get anxious in lines that you have this little ritual, you have this little something to remind you that connect you. I think that's a wise thing to do, especially if the alternative is worse.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much.
Great, thank you. So I apologize for the rest of you who are there, and maybe there's another time we have a chance to hear your questions, so I want to thank you all very much, and I appreciate having this contact. And in my heart, those of you who spoke, you also, in a sense, spoke as a representative of the whole. Because I really kind of, I feel both you as an individual, but also now I have a richer feeling and connection to the group, and the fact that at least one of you connected from far away where it's dark morning and the roosters was very meaningful to feel a sense of this global community. So I want to thank you all very, very much. And I look forward to continuing. And next week, what's going to happen next week is... the easy thing to say, next week it'll be 7 days, Monday through Sunday, because I'm going to integrate it into the retreat I'm doing that starts on Thursday evening. So that it will continue the whole time. And how the first 4 days, Monday through Thursday, fits into the theme of the retreat is part of the art that I haven't quite figured out. And so you'll be patient or generous with me, I hope, as we find our way next week. But I'm looking forward to it, and I'll look forward to all this. Thank you so much. So if you'd like, if you go on Gallery View, and if you'd like to, maybe the host can unmute all. And then if you want to just say goodbye and greetings and well wishing to your community here, it'll be chaos.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for sharing the practice. Bye, everyone. Bye, doggy.
Hey, monkey.
Oh, bye. So sweet.
Okay. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Adios.
Bye. Adios.